You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
There's a bunch of guys sitting around a couple of tables at Hendox on a Monday evening, so it must be the Massive Report podcast. Brought to you by... Oh, the light in here is so weird. Let me try this. The Massive Report is brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next project. All right. I found the light that works. I see the light. And we need to come up with some light to shine in the darkness, do we? Mike Kroski, Alex Stanek, Bart Logan. It was a game that we can either spend a lot of time parsing or we can spend very little time parsing. That is up for you guys or to you guys. But let's start this way. I'm going to go around the table. I'm going to ask you to say one positive thing about a 3-0 loss at Philadelphia Union. I just threw you a curve. And you can raise your hand if you want to go first. If you have nothing, just say, I got nothing. And silence.
It wasn't for nothing.
Okay.
That's good. That's a good point, Stanek.
That's good.
We got to see Josh Williams, or whatever J.J. Williams' first real name is. And he looked. You know, all right, serviceable in a game that, you know, there wasn't much to take away. I guess that's a positive. 35 minutes of decent work.
He's huge. Yeah. That's the thing that jumped out. It's like, oh, my, I knew he was big, but you see him on the field. It's like everybody else on the field is very tiny compared to him.
And we're used to, like, the Adam Bedells and stuff, the really big guys who just can't even play with that size.
So,
there's a lot of potential there.
Sure. Sure. I mean, he just jumps off the screen with his size and athleticism. Mike, something positive.
Yes, the positive that I have is that Bart is incorrect with his preseason prediction of the Crew not losing a game all year round.
Point.
I never thought that one would come back to haunt me.
No, it's okay to get the first loss out of the way, because you can start tweaking and not get too high on yourself and things like that. It's okay to lose. It's going to happen. It's just about how you respond to it. So.
Sure. Well, you know, there are some things to learn, because there were regulars on the pitch on Saturday in Philadelphia, and they looked ragged defensively. And that's the first time we've had to say that all this year. We've been so organized, so sound, and Zach Steffen doesn't play. Bendick is in the goal. We can't blame it all on him, obviously, and we're not going to do that, because there were some glaring defensive mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, at least two, if not all three, of the goals came from, you know, sloppy play in the back or sloppy turnover that led to a counter. And I think one thing that you really saw was how it seemed like the back line was discombobulated, and the only person who wasn't there that's normally there out of the starting four was Waylon Francis, you know. And you would think, three of the four, and it's not like Hector Jimenez is some bum rookie. I mean, he's been in the league a long time. So my thought was, hey, at least we have that intact.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't – I think it really showed our weakness, and this is something that was brought up – I think it was the first podcast this year. The back line, can they handle – building out of the back? And it kind of sounds funny, because that's what Berhalter's whole thing was, right? But something that concerned me during the preseason was Gaston Saro and a little bit of Mensah looked a little sloppy sometimes getting the ball out of the back, and it really showed in this game. And I don't know if it's a mix of, you know, a team like Philly just got hot, got a little luck, or maybe it's a mix of that Joe Bendick doesn't have the same rapport with those guys and the same communication that maybe Steffen has, but they looked lost.
I thought our transition play was horrible. Whenever we lost possession in our own half or near the halfway mark, you could not get Offal and Jimenez back in time, and Akam just ran the team ragged. If we had a full-strength team, you would have had Will Trapp dropping back as basically a third center back, helping to cover, and that would allow Saro or Mensah to slot over and almost act as a right back or a left back. We didn't have that. Ricardo Clark was not really playing that role to the level that you needed him to play, and Artur was not really getting the signal that he needed to do that.
Well, Artur was not 100%.
Yeah, he was not.
He was subbed out because of that. There was some question whether he would even play to begin with.
Yeah.
So it was sort of an avalanche of problems that we don't normally have. But you still, as professionals, have to be able to deal with those. And they didn't.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Berhalter's system that has now become Porter's system in a lot of ways was built around this kind of spine that we have, where you have Will Trapp, and then you have a strong center back pairing in Mensa and Saro, or Mensa and Williams, whatever the pairing was, and then Zach Steffen. And when you're missing half of that spine, the system needs to adjust or you're going to have problems. We have always played a kind of high-risk, high-reward system where those wingbacks almost are midfielders when we're in possession. When you lose possession suddenly and those guys don't have time to drop back, you need that spine to bail you out. And it's always getting bailed out. It's never very comfortable from the stands or from watching on TV or anything. You're always kind of like, uh-oh, this could be trouble. And it was trouble when we were in Philadelphia. And, you know, we're losing Steffen in the summer. Figuring out how to deal with that is going to be a challenge. But, you know, there are always these rumors of Will Trapp going as well. And if you were to lose both of those guys, I think this could be a regular thing. And if there is even a chance of that, I hope they are scouting highly, highly talented, surefire solutions for this, not, you know, kind of rolling the dice on anybody, because the whole system won't work otherwise.
Is this, Bart, a game where Caleb Porter is looking at what Alex just brought up, losing Zach Steffen for sure?
Mm-hmm.
There's a better than pretty good chance we're going to lose Will Trapp as well. Is this a sign to him that, because he doesn't know who would be brought in to replace Will Trapp. That maybe tactically he has to start thinking a different way? I don't know. Is it too early?
Yeah. I don't think it's too early, especially when you're talking about a player that is just so important to this team, not just for what he does on the field, but, you know, who he is in the locker room, who he is for this franchise, really the face of the hometown boy. But I'm almost, you know, for as much as you miss what Will brings to you, especially in a game like that, if I'm Caleb Porter, I'm a little bit more concerned about the starting front four. Obviously, Mullins is getting in there for the first, you know, real prolonged action he's seen. But otherwise, you know, you started Robinho over Justin Miram last week. He was the only guy in that starting front four that managed a shot. Gaston Saro had more shots than Frederico Higuain, Robinho, Pedro Santos, and Patrick Mullins combined. That is unacceptable. And you are not going to win games in MLS when that's the case, at least not with this team, not with the depth or the lack thereof. I guess they really had to play with their depth in this game. And you saw, while they might be able to, you know, maybe hang with some teams in short spans or with guys coming in as subs, you know, putting in the whole 90 minutes without some of those big guns, without a guy like Giassi Zardes, who we were critical of the week prior. Mm-hmm. But you see what he's able to at least create chances for other people by demanding that attention. I just didn't see that much from Mullins.
I feel like if we run into another situation where we don't have Zardes, we don't have Trapp, I think they need to go to two forwards, something, because Patrick Mullins can't do it alone up there. I think JJ Williams, we haven't seen enough of him, but he's a young guy. He's still got to learn the pro game, so I think it's unlikely that he would be able to handle that. And Porter had mentioned in preseason potentially going to a 4-4-2 in certain situations, because you have to be able to adapt, right, given whatever circumstances MLS schedule throws at you. And I think it showed that and you don't want to get ahead of yourself and go, oh, well, Patrick Mullins, he's a bum. He had his one shot and it didn't work out. He's just not that guy anyway, I don't think he's ever been, whether it was with New England. So I think this really shows that if they don't have that group, that core, you need to go to another system and kind of get strengths from there.
All right. Well, we're not giving enough credit to the opponent. They didn't have a lot of chances, but they put them on frame, and they scored three goals. And I'm reading certainly on MassiveReport.com that their formation caused the crew a lot of issues on Saturday. Is that when I'm reading about the diamond formation that I was looking at when I was watching the game on Saturday, Mike, what does that mean? What tactically were the Union doing that caused us problems, or were we ready for it and we just didn't execute? What was it?
Well, I mean, for me, the diamond, from a personal standpoint, the diamond's my favorite system. If you have
explain
the right
what it is.
Okay, so the diamond, there's a tight end, a midfield where there's four midfielders shaped as a diamond. So you mm-hmm. have the top being the attacking mid, the holding mid more in the bottom, then you have two kind of narrow midfielders. And the whole idea is to control the midfield. And they certainly did that. And I think it was even, we were exposed even more so. Forget the 4-4-2 diamond. I think even if we would have played that, if we would have had our true lineup in there, I don't think it would have been as effective. I think it's less what they did to us and more about we just didn't have the personnel, like Stanek said, down the spine. Now, again, 4-4-2 diamond, it's brutal because, yes, it exposes the width, right? But if you control the center of the field, to me, that's much more important. And, you know, David Akam, I mean, he hadn't scored in like a year or something, right?
It was, and then, when they were talking about it, I go, this guy is, he's not a bum. He's like a
I mean,
a
he's a DP.
Player.
I mean, he's a designated player.
Yeah.
He had his moments in Chicago where he was just a beast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he caught fire. Unfortunately, it was against the crew. But, I mean, the diamond is dangerous, and especially if you have the players that can do it. And secondly, if you're playing against a team that's already weak, it's going to make it look like, you know, like it's a world-beating formation.
And I don't know if it's, you know, this might be adding just narrative that isn't really part of it. But, you know, David Akam, Ghanaian national player, he's played and practiced with Jonathan Mensah, with Harrison Offal before. I don't know if it's whether, you know, there's an extra competitive element, if there's, you know, a degree of familiarity with some of their tactics. But you look at the players that were exploited on his goals, and it was those two as well.
Sure, that's a great point.
And I just think any player with the kind of pace that Akam is going to have is going to cause problems for the crew. I think historically, last two or three seasons at least, that's been the case. If you can get behind our wingbacks, you're going to cause trouble. And when you can get behind our wingbacks and you're fast enough that nobody can catch you, then you're really going to cause trouble. I think this is a learning experience for Porter. I think he's got to set up, like you were saying, Mike, set up differently. Against teams like this, especially when you're short on people. If Will Trapp has an injury, something like this throughout the season, we're going to need to adjust. We saw this when Will Trapp had his concussion injury, his whole issue where he was out for, I think, 2 or 3 months, maybe even longer than that now that I'm thinking about it. It caused all kinds of problems for us because we had trouble filling that role in the system that we played. We have a new coach now, so maybe we can see some innovation on that front. But it's definitely something that crew fans are going to have to keep an eye on throughout this season because I don't think this problem's going to go away.
Well, and also I think it's not like they're unaccustomed to the 4-4-2 because what you've seen recently in the last couple of weeks, defensively, they're in a 4-4-2 right from the jump. When the we saw it against, was it Dallas, the 1-0 game? Right? At home? That was Dallas, right?
Yep.
We saw it in that game. From the moment the game started, they dropped into a hard block of 4-4-2 every time Dallas had the ball. So it's not like it's a formation that they're not accustomed to. You could easily morph that into the offensive side as well. So, I don't know. I'm hoping that, like you said, Sank, that could be a learning time for Porter and he can go, hey, next time we run into this, we need to give Mullins or Williams or whoever some help because they were just alone on an island up there. They stood no chance offensively.
All right, well, we're not going to dwell on this game too much because in a lot of ways they'll learn from it, but from our perspective anyway, maybe it's kind of a burn the tape sort of game and and not indicative of what this team is capable of doing. But it was pretty rough. But before we go to the break, and we'll come back and we'll give our grades because that's what we do, I want to talk about the U.S. men's national team because there was a fellow named Will Trapp who apparently didn't get great reviews from NBC, which I don't know. I don't know what game they were watching. I was so impressed with him in that game against Ecuador. I watched most of his time on the field. He came out at about the hour mark. He was outstanding, outstanding. And I was so proud of him. I wish we could have somehow cloned him and had him on Saturday. But before we go to the break, we were talking before we got started because you obviously miss Zach Steffen in a game like this, and we're going to be missing him forever pretty soon when he goes to Manchester City. But beyond just the great athletic saves that he makes, I wonder if you guys could speak to the intangibles that maybe we don't think about every day. How he communicates what he wants to his teammates, that maybe Bendick hasn't developed that rapport yet. I know one of you mentioned that in passing a few moments ago. But talk about the intangibles that Zach Steffen brings to this club that they're going to have to replace.
Not to compare Steffen to Bendick, but, I mean, that's going to be what we're going to do for a little while. But where Bendick succeeds is as a shot stopper, period. And he's not a particularly great distributor of the ball. He's not a particularly great organizer of a defense. But he can make saves. And I think when you have a guy like Steffen who is a little more athletic, but also he gets that team organized. And I don't think it was an accident or a coincidence that the defense looked discombobulated. As I mentioned before with Bendick, because again, he's probably not getting the amount of time that Steffen is with the back four like that. But thirdly, I think the biggest thing is when you have a defense that is shorthanded, they're trying to make up for what, say, Will Trapp or Steph. They're going to try and overextend what they can do. And then in short, that makes it to where they are leaving themselves exposed to make mistakes. They're not playing within the game that they know how, within their strengths. They're trying to make up for other gaps in the field. And once that starts happening, it's like a domino effect. And then, boom, the whole team starts struggling a little bit. And I think that was very clear this week.
And it's a lot easier to overextend or for them to at least feel comfortable with it when they know they've got Zach Steffen back there who can bail them out, who has bailed them out, who's got a track record, a highlight reel of bailing them out, especially, you know, what we've seen this team in under Greg Berhalter when they had to play it out of the back and you had, you know, Jonathan Mensah, who initially had a lot of struggles with a lot of center backs who've struggled to distribute the ball back there. And Zach Steffen's been there to build that up. You build up in that sort of confidence that you've got with him, and you know he's got your back. So when you're feeling like you've got overextend on one end of the pitch, and then on the other end you're feeling like this guy might not have your back, or you might have to get back there faster a little bit. I think it's kind of pulling you in two directions, and you're not able to really focus on what's going on in front of you in the game in front of you because you're worrying about these two other things in the back of your mind.
And you know, Bendick is not necessarily a bad keeper.
I'm not putting this on him at all.
No.
But I think a lot of Crew fans have just become so accustomed to the goalkeeping freak that is Zach Steffen that any sort of average MLS goalkeeper performance looks horrible in comparison. The fact is, Zach Steffen probably saves at least two of those shots this game. But that's so unusual, and that's going to be so hard for us to replace. I didn't think Bendick did horribly. I just think, you know, we're so accustomed to these freak one-on-one saves that he seems to make at least once a game, where Steffen will just kind of come out of nowhere and kick save it or get a palm to it and push it wide or something where he has no business making the save. So, you know, it's like you said, it's kind of a burn the tape game.
It's presence also that you feel when you're watching him play. It's just that presence that the players have to feel too. Is there any more important position on the field than your goalkeeper? If they can keep you in the game and keep everybody organized and cool and scream at people. I laugh when I watch games, whether it's Premier League or whatever. I love watching the goalie see one sail inches over the top, and then he immediately turns around and points at somebody and lets them have it. And it's such a rich part of the game, and it's so important. They have to have that command of the 10 guys in front of them. Whoever they are, they're the coach on the field.
Yeah, and, I mean, you know, Bendick's only been with the club for about 2 months, 2.5 months, you know. He doesn't have that command. He's not the guy, you know, getting the most time in training and stuff like that. So, you know, you could easily say, well, you could just plug and play. Everybody has to step up. That sounds good in theory, but, yeah, it's really not. And, you know, the thing about Steffen is you constantly hear him. If you're watching the game on TV, you can hear him screaming at the ref or his teammates or whatever it is. You know, that's just part of what he brings. And like Stanek said, guys like that, you can't just pull him off a tree and go, I got another Steffen.
No.
That's not how it works. Joe Bendick is a good, serviceable MLS keeper. But there's a reason why he's not being sold to Manchester City. right?
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. Crew fans have to understand there is going to be a little bit of a drop in play. You're not just – goalkeepers like that aren't just out on the market just available all willy-nilly. Yeah, there's
a reason
why.
You're not going to find them. And I guess we can take solace in knowing that our former coach, Greg Berhalter, looks at this guy and goes, this is my guy. This is going to bring us back to the World Cup. That's it. The rest of it, I'm still figuring out. But this is my guy. And Man City said, and it'll be fascinating to see how much he plays and what his role is with one of the top clubs in the world.
Yeah.
You know, what's his role going to be? I want to turn on NBC at 7 a.m. on a Saturday, or, you know, they'll be playing later, I suppose, because it's Man City. Thank God, because I don't like getting up that early on a Saturday. But I want to turn on the TV and see him between the pipes. I'm really excited about that. I'm bummed that he's not going to be here. And again, it's like Will. It's like, can we clone them or something? Because they are so vital. But we'll figure that stuff out. It's not even April yet. And I think it was good to get this out of the way now.
Yep.
And we can moan about MLS sticking us with this weird March schedule again. Where, you know, we don't have many games to go over when we do that part of the podcast from the scoreboard over the weekend, because most teams had the weekend off. But we seem to always get stuck with these international window games. And after a while, the tinfoil hat goes on your head and goes, why is this? Why do we get stuck with these matches? It's not cool. And in September, when you're fighting for playoff position, you look back at those points that you didn't get because you had half a roster. Right. It's not right.
Bart, do you think that has anything to do with your boy Garber?
I believe it does. A lot to do with it.
No, I think the MLS schedules, Keith Noss actually pointed out, and so a lot of this was actually slated, you know, scheduled with the old regime, who I don't know that they were necessarily, you know, actively trying to undermine it as much as, again, they just didn't care,
right,
and just
right.
said, okay, here's the schedule you got. You're not going to do the horse trading or anything like that. Because why are you? You got one foot out the door and you know, everything else. So I don't know in this case that it was Don Garber, but Don Garber is the one who approved Anthony Precourt ultimately as a owner for an MLS team to purchase the crew from the Hunts in 2014. So this is still Don Garber's fault.
So the man of the match for Philadelphia Union is not David Akam. It's Anthony Precourt. We're going to the break here. When we come back, we'll hand out our grades, and we will talk about the U.S. men's national team a little bit more as they are in the international window with our Will Trapp and Jossie Zardes when we return on the Massive Report here from Hendox.
Coach, after a great start to the season, a tough one tonight. Your thoughts?
Yeah, tough one. Like you said, took one on the chin today. Didn't play very well, especially in that first half, and to start the second half, obviously that third goal is a backbreaker. You know, so we have to learn from it. Obviously, we made some mistakes. Starts with our passing game. Thought we gave the ball away for all three goals in bad spots, and then it turned into, you know, transition the other way. And we knew with Picoult and Akam they'd be dangerous in transition, and, you know, we can't give the ball away, and we need to be better in transition.
Both teams missing five, but how influential you guys missing Will Trapp, Jossie, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, they had guys out, we had guys out. You know, for me, you know, that's no excuse. We have a squad, we have good players, we had good players in the game today, and, you know, we have to be better, no matter who's in the lineup. Starts with the coaches as well. I mean, if the team has a bad game, the coaches have a bad game, and so ultimately I take responsibility, and it's our first bit of adversity this year. It's our first loss, even including the preseason. So we have to keep it in perspective. You know, we've all been through games like this. We need to be men about it. We need to be pros about it. And we need to reflect on it and correct the things we didn't do well enough. But also we can't get carried away, you know, with anything more than that. We have to stay process oriented and we have to correct our mistakes.
So moving forward to Atlanta next week, how do you go back and correct those mistakes?
Well, I think there was one pattern that led to all three goals, and it starts with our ability on the ball.
We have to be better. We have to be cleaner. We have to move the ball quicker, and we can't give the ball away in bad spots. You know, so we need to work on that and look at the film and you know, look, is it a spacing thing, a rotation thing? Is it a tempo on the ball issue? And then in transition, you know, defensive transition. Obviously, we're a passing team. If you're going to have the ball, then you're going to be vulnerable in transition. So we need to be balanced, and we need to react quicker, and we need to make sure that they don't score once we lose the ball.
We're back on the Massive Report. We hear Coach Caleb Porter with my old friend. I haven't seen him in a while, Duncan Outen. He's fun to drink. What's the New Zealand beer? Sennheiser? What? No, those are microphones. What is it? It's right on the tip of my tongue. You know what? He's good for any beer you bring him. He's a good bloke, and I miss him. I have to track him down. It's great to hear him doing some post-game interviews. It was not a pleasant topic. Anything you disagree with, fellas?
I appreciated Caleb Porter, first of all, laying the blame with himself. Not even, you know, I would say, again, the easiest person to blame for this one is Don Garber for ignoring the international break and everything. But he was the bigger man, and he shouldered the blame for himself. And I think especially, you know, when you've got a lot of your guys out of the lineup, you've got some guys who, you know, frankly, still don't really know where they stand in Caleb Porter's. They knew where they were in Greg Berhalter's locker room, not necessarily Caleb Porter's. It would be easy to maybe throw some guys under the bus or potentially lose them. And for him to shoulder that blame and take that on himself, I think that was big. And I think it's good for team morale moving forward. I also appreciated the little kind of humble brag, but also, you know, taking note of it that, hey, this is still the first loss that they've suffered, even in the preseason. They've done well. They've had some success. And they're not going to let this get in the way or shape and color the rest of the season.
You know, for me, I'm with you there, Bart. I think real leaders fall on the sword first, even if maybe it isn't their fault, right? And I think that's a good thing. You know, but ultimately what it comes down to is they're easy things to correct in the terms of transition. And also, you know, we need to get the ball off our foot a little quicker. I think that was a big part of the transition, right? But look, in the end, I don't want to get too caught up in one game, you know, 4 weeks into the season. The team's going to be fine. There's going to be ups and downs. It's an MLS season. There's peaks and valleys. But, you know, I think ultimately when it comes to October, November, and we're looking at playoff standings, I don't think we're going to be looking at this too much. And, again, losing, you learn so much from it. It's just about how you respond. And I think Porter's the type of guy that's going to have the team respond accordingly.
You know, on Massive Report, grades are handed out for each player. But this was a 3-0 loss. And I started – tonight's Massive Report podcast by asking you to think of something positive. So in keeping with that theme, I want you to give, rather than going through each player, let's just get this behind us. Let's each of you pick one player and give them whatever number you give them, and that's your top number for the game. Make it harder?
Our best player?
Yeah. And give him a grade. And it might be a 6 or it might be a 5.5. If Ralph was here, it might be a 2. But he's not here. So you can – there will be no 10s, 9s, 8s, 7s. I think 6 is probably the top. Let's pick one player. You guys, I'm not doing it. That's too hard. I'm just here to throw the ball around or kick the ball around, I should say. I guess that makes more sense. Anybody want to jump in first?
There's smoke coming out of my ears.
Get it in for Josh Williams, JJ Williams. I thought, again, you know, coming in 35 minutes of time, he managed 2 shots, which is 2/5 of the shots the team got. He showed you, again, what tools and skill sets he brings to the table, and I think it's the most optimistic point that I took away. So I know I'm just rehashing the same only good thing that
what
took
number?
From the first. I'll give him a 6.
A 6.
Wow.
See, Bart went first
and
took the most obvious guy because you guys are hemming and hawing. You have to come up with somebody else.
I didn't want to steal Bart's dude. I mean, I don't want to do that. But JJ Williams would have got a 6 from me as well. I'm going to do Pipa, and I'm going to give him a 5.5.
All right. It was not his best game.
No, it was not.
Speaking of him, one of the things that I felt was most disappointing is I felt like he was trying to be too cute, too cheeky in the game. You know, a lot of heel flicks, a lot of no-look, one-touch passes.
That is a great point because when it works, it's so much fun. Mm-hmm. But I felt like it was sort of like I saw Kiss a couple of weeks ago, and it's a long show, and those guys are not young. So in order to give everyone a blow, you got your drum solo, and you got your bass solo, and so forth. I felt like those back passes were like drum solos that didn't need to be there.
Yeah, it just in games where things are clicking, that kind of stuff works. But in a game like that, just get back to the basics. Let's connect the pass. Let's get some combos going on.
Yeah.
Right? And I
we
just
don't want
felt
a fish
like,
concert.
Right? No, we don't.
But you ever been to a fish concert?
No, of course, never.
All right. As an aside here, since it's a 3-0 loss, 10 years ago, I've been to Bonnaroo like 9 times, okay? The 1 year I had an actual photo pass was 10 years ago. And they have rules like, okay, you guys can be in the photo pit for the first 3 songs and then you go. And then the security comes and they escort you out. And you're right in front of the stage. So I was the only non-professional photographer. I had a rented camera and I didn't have all the cool lenses and everything. I probably had a beer in my hand and my camera in the other. And all the professional photographers are looking at me going, yeah, what are you doing here?
I go, dudes.
So they said 3 songs. We could be here for like an hour and a half, right? Like, yeah. I don't know how we got off on that tangent, but at any rate.
Was the camera one of those Kodak disposables?
No, like, no. It was like a Nikon or something like that, you know? Oh, it took real. My pictures aren't that bad, you know, I had no qualifications for the job at all. But, yeah, thanks for bringing up fish. I appreciate that. They kicked us out after 1 song because that was plenty long enough.
Yeah, I imagine.
God, right. You know, I still can't come up with somebody.
Right back to the grades.
I'm racking my brain I'm trying not to be a negative Ned here, but I honestly can't think of anybody. I'm like, yeah, they played even average. I thought it was all subpar.
I mean, I don't know how I want to grade Mullins. The thing about Mullins is he had almost nothing to do, right. And I'm not sure that was all his fault.
Sure.
He didn't screw anything up. He just never got the ball.
Right.
So you could almost give him like a 5 something maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Like, the whole game was super depressing. It was literally you just watched it and you were, I'm wasting my life. Like, I'm going to be on my deathbed someday being like, I wish I just had 2 more hours. Oh, God, that Philly game from 2019.
No,
give me
concert.
That time back. It was one of those games. It was really not fun. So, yeah,
you know
it's hard. It's hard to give anybody any marks other than like a 5. But
let's put that game in the ground.
Yeah.
And leave it behind. Yeah. I wasn't going to go over scores, but I should note that FC Cincinnati won again on Sunday, 2-0 over New England Revolution. Are they a thing?
I still think they're bad.
Okay.
Did anyone watch it?
I didn't watch it.
I watched half of it.
I watched part of it, and New England looks like a dumpster fire in Friedel right now.
Okay.
They look terrible.
Yeah, they've
Was he looking at his watch at the end of the match again, like against us?
He was very ticked off, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He was looking out for Spider-Man because he is Kingpin in the 90s Spider-Man cartoons.
That's true.
He looks just like him.
That's a good call.
All right.
Yeah, they've played 2 dumpster fire teams, and their fans think that they're a world beater because they've beaten 2 teams that are playing like crap. So.
Well, we're going to play a team that they drew with not that long ago, and we'll get to that here in our third segment, a preview of, thank God, there's another game. If this was the final game of the crew's history, that would not be cool. But you know what? We can put this behind us, and we can look forward to playing the defending champions. Before we get to the break, though, any thoughts on the U.S. men's national team? I kind of touched on it earlier. I don't know. Maybe I'm a homer. Maybe it's because my daughters are in love with Will Trapp. Maybe that has something to do with it.
You are not a homer. It has nothing to do with your daughters.
He looked.
Trapp was a boss.
He looked brilliant.
In that game. Yeah, he was a boss. To be very candid, and I like Trapp a lot, my thought initially with Berhalter taking over and Trapp coming, I thought, okay, they have Trapp to help implement the system. Do I see him playing in the next World Cup? probably not, to be very honest. And I do love me some Will Trapp, all right? But I'll tell you what, if he keeps playing games like he did in that hour that he played in that, he's going to be on the roster when we
qualify
him.
Well, is Michael Bradley going to get another run at that position if it's not him?
No, but I think it's one of those things that, I mean, we're still, what, 2 years out from qualifying. Yeah. And every, if you go back even to 94, that team, there's a handful, 2-3 guys that aren't even on the radar at this point. Yeah. End up being not only
that's
on the roster,
point.
But make that starter get big time minutes. So I think we're too far away to really mention that.
Yeah, life goes by very fast, especially as you get older, like me, and you go, "Wow, a year just." Poof. But in terms of international soccer, because of the 4-year window of the World Cup, you're right. There are kids. There's a 17-year-old somewhere that only they know about that we don't know about. Who knows who that person is? But for that match, he looked so together. And they were doing there was a lot of tight spaces to deal with in that game. And it was nothing fancy, but he got the ball and distributed it. He was the point guard. I'll give him a 10 while he was out there. I know NBC only gave him a 5.5. I don't know what they were looking at.
I give him a good 7.5, 8. I thought he was distributing well and long balls too to spread the field out. He
so
was tackling
out to the left flank, especially those balls were just they were like balloons. They were just floated gently right where they needed to go. I was so proud of him.
It's cool having him on the national team.
It really is. It is,
and he's like this hometown kid. This is something I almost brought up during our discussion of the Crew game, but I'm just going to throw it out there. I and people are going to blow me up for this, but it's fine. I would put a stop to the transfer rumors about Will Trapp by using the pile of TAM that we have collected over the last year to buy down Pedro Santos, and I would offer Will Trapp a DP contract. Ooh. I don't think he is worth the money, but I think that having the U.S. men's national team captain going into the World Cup on your team and having, because he's going to be the captain. He's going to be the captain. And having this hometown kid playing for your hometown team when they open that new stadium, it's worth the money. I would just do it. I would put all of it to bed. We've got the money to buy down Pedro Santos. Just do it. Just pull the trigger. Do it. And put a stop to the rumors and then build around him.
Yeah.
As a Crew fan, I'm for that, and I love seeing Will. As a fan of the U.S. men's team, though, or just USA in general, frankly, more the women because they're a lot more fun to watch and they win. But, I think one of the biggest turning point for the program, really, for U.S. soccer, was when Michael Bradley and the Jozy Altidore and all those heroes from that 2014 and those 2010 teams started making their ways back to MLS, stopped playing against the best competition, and instead just took their money and got paid. And good for – I don't fault you for getting paid as an athlete, especially as one – and also I'm coming back to my hemisphere where people I know live. So I don't hold that against them, but I do think it – I don't think it was helpful for the progression of the national team. And I think for Will Trapp, I think it's really now or never if he's ever going to go to Europe. I don't know that he necessarily is a player who can really make it in some of the big high-profile European leagues, Premier League, Serie A maybe, or maybe La Liga. But I think you got to find out at some point. And if he decides that he doesn't want to, then I want him locked down here. But I also don't want us to necessarily stand in the way, not just from him from a professional development standpoint, but also for him if he's going to be that anchor, that number 6 for the national team. I want him cutting his teeth against the best in the world.
Yeah, I'm going to go back almost 20 years now. It blows my mind that it's been that long. But there was that group of guys from 02 anchored by our own Brian McBride. And he was so great in that World Cup. And I think maybe that particular team made U.S. soccer think that, okay, we don't necessarily need these guys going overseas anymore. Look at what they did.
Yeah.
Look at what they did. But that was that particular group of guys, and it was such a great team. And he was, I think he was on the cover of Time magazine, for crying out loud. He was so important. But he went to Fulham, and he did well there. And he was one of the, other than goalkeepers, you can't name a lot of guys who have gone to that league from this country and were productive professionals. He has a bar in the stadium named after him.
Right.
That's how important Brian McBride was.
Well, and if you're talking about Fulham, if you're talking about going to a team of that caliber, or Manchester City like Stefan is going to, then I totally understand the argument. But in the past, the teams that Will Trapp have been linked with are teams in the Greek league, or teams in Norway and Sweden and Denmark.
That's not going to do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, if AS Roma come calling and say, hey, Will, we'd like you to start in our midfield.
Or how about a club in the championship? A club that has aspirations of being promoted.
Well, and you see then...
Can he play at that level?
I think he can, but I'm not sure that that's a dramatic, challenge for him in comparison with Major League Soccer. I think those are similar leagues where you're not necessarily getting the kind of benefit out of it that makes it worthwhile from a development standpoint. Will Trapp, I think a lot of people still think of as this, 22-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. He's 26 years old. Realistically,
he's a married man now.
Realistically, he's got maybe another year before he's peaking, if he hasn't already peaked.
His age, and the fact that we failed to qualify in his age, he's in, you're right. I mean, he got not old, but definitely missing the World Cup this last time around for him. Professionally was a disaster.
Well, and he lost about a season over the course of two seasons in terms of injuries, just with the head injuries, the concussions.
Yeah, we forget
the worry
about
with
that
too.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that people, and you bring up this point, Bart, talking about Josie and Michael and Clint and all these guys coming back around the same time and getting paid, and if that was a hindrance to the U.S. national team. I don't think the move from Europe to MLS was the hindrance. I think the hindrance was we lost the American grit that our teams were known for. We had talent in 02. We got by on grit. 2006 was crap. 2010, we made it with grit. All right, that's what it was. Now these guys that are the stars of the U.S. team, they're kind of they're almost entitled. Think they can just walk into CONCACAF and they qualify. There is this pampering of those players now. It's much less about them coming here and the lack of training, quote unquote, that people say, and it's we lost our grit. And if there's anything that we can gain from not qualifying in the 2018 World Cup, it's we need to understand, we need to get the boots back on and find the American grit that we've had for years, because that's what's gotten us by, not just pure talent.
Well, I'm gonna disagree with you on that. I think the change that happened was for decades the United States was such an underdog that tactically we set out every game and every tournament to basically just nick a win on some counterattack. And we sat back, we bunkered in, and then we would counter. I mean, even if you go back to, when Landon Donovan had that goal against Ghana in the dying minutes of the game, I mean, we basically bunkered down. We bunkered down when you had Wondolowski miss that goal against, was it Belgium?
Belgium.
And so we've been trying to kind of break out of that, at least to a degree, and then we will try to just kind of play this counterattacking style when we have these, teams that we know are quote unquote better than us. But at least against the smaller teams, we try to play attractive attacking soccer. I think that's why they brought on Greg Berhalter, is they want that kind of fluid European style attacking soccer. Whether our players are up to the level to play that or not, I think remains to be seen. The thing about all these games that under the Berhalter regime that concerns me a little bit is that the level of difficulty for the opponent has not been there. So this system is really great when you're playing a team that's equal or below you in talent level. I think if you play a team that is really, really good, the Berhalter system is going to get exposed a little bit. So that's something that I think U.S. fans should be a little bit wary of. If we have to go up against a Germany or something, I think we could lose like 8-0.
Especially when we know one of Greg Berhalter's weaknesses has probably been his stubbornness in wanting to just impose his will and stick with his system, results be damned. And we saw that, for his first two 2.5 seasons with the Crew. We started to see him adjusting in the latter half of 2017 and then last year, and it'll be interested to see, especially after the early success he's had with this national team, you know, whether he might start leaning back toward the, you know, my system, it works, this is just proving itself, or whether he's going to, you know, look at those opponents and try to tailor to them more.
Well, so to kind of go with what you were saying, Alex, is that I think you kind of make the point, though. Like, what I mean by that is, if you look at what we've been seeing in these first few games with Berhalter as the coach, we're seeing grit again. We're seeing guys that feel like they need to prove themselves. I think with this group that we had in the 18 qualifying, they felt like they've already proved themselves. So they could just waltz in and make some happen, especially against putsy old Trinidad, right? And I think we lost it because they were these stars that in America they were stars, and they go to Europe and hey, we're the big dogs now. They come back here and think they can coast on the national team or even in MLS, and that's not the case anymore. You can't do that.
Well, and one last thing on Will Trapp, you know, we were talking about how maybe Michael Bradley going over to Roma was a good thing and him coming back to Toronto was a bad thing. He came back to Toronto when he was the same age that Will Trapp is now. So maybe that ship has kind of already sailed for Will, but it's hard to say.
Well, time will tell, and this summer is going to be very important for his career.
Yep.
And whatever it is, wish him nothing but the best.
Absolutely.
He has been nothing but a great representative of this city, and whatever he does, we're going to be proud of him.
Yep.
And quick shout out to Jossie Zardes too, though. He got the goal for him, and he looked. I mean, I think this is a great opportunity for Jossie too. This is a team that is anything but a sure thing at the striker position, and I mean, it looks like, you know, Greg Berhalter, if anything, he's got familiarity with Jossie Zardes, and he knows that Jossie knows what to do within his system. So I think he's going to have, you know, as good a chance as any of these strikers, even though he doesn't maybe have the pedigree as some of the other ones. And if he can continue to produce, even if it's accidental, he's going to have a good chance.
It's all still a
goal.
Well,
he's a good dude, and I have fun watching him. Anytime he's successful, especially with the U.S. national team. There was another guy who was gone through the international window, and we're going to hear maybe the biggest moment of his career when we come back on the Massive Report.
ما في غيره هذه أمر لا يحدث كثيرا. كرة في الجهة اليسرى خطيرة الآن عراقية ضرقاء الله جسون سجل جاستن ميرام أول أهداف العراق هنا ويقص شريط الأهداف في بطولة الصداقة الدولية الثانية في البصرة في جذع النخلة.
We all know the history of Iraq over the past 3 decades at this point, and how much misery and despondency has happened in that country. And here you have Justin Miram, who we forget was a field goal kicker for the University of Michigan.
Yeah.
And his parents are Iraqi. And so he qualifies to play for the Iraqi national team. And on the Massive Report, as we're back here on the Massive Report, we talked about Miram getting off to a very slow start with our Columbus Crew. But to see him in Basra, Iraq, against a Syrian team, and those guys and their country, men and women, have certainly been through their own horrors, and to see those two teams playing one another in Basra, Iraq, and for Justin Miram to be the hero of the Iraqi national team. Just a few days ago, I saw that video on Twitter, and I got chills, and I was so happy for him, and I was so happy for everyone there. It was such a great moment, a wonderful goal from Justin Miram. I don't know if you guys saw it, if you have any thoughts on it. Mm. I don't even really want to talk about, well, this will give him confidence coming back to his club. I think it will. We know he's capable of more, but just it was. That's what makes sports great. There are a lot of things that are wrong with sports, and we could get into those and spend all night here at Hen Dogs. But that's one little moment that makes sports great. It brought a country together.
The main thing was just seeing the relief on his face.
Yeah.
That was nice. And, yeah, hopefully it does lead to something with the Crew. But just you could see there was this anvil lifted off of the man's shoulder. So that alone was awesome.
I loved the crowd shots. It was one of these kind of stadiums that you see someplace where the players are a little bit farther away from the fans. But
you got the track around.
Yeah, he ran
and so
straight
forth.
Across and was just going. And I loved it. You saw the pictures. Everybody had the Iraqi flags. And everybody was, waving the flags around and stuff. It was cool. And you're right. You know, that's what makes sports great. And, a boost not only for him, but for everybody who was watching that game. And credit to Justin for a great goal.
My little sister, she spent a couple years working, actually resettling refugees from the Mosul conflict, and lived in Erbil, northern Iraq, the Kurdish region. And she also went to the University of Michigan. So there's a bit of a...
Where?
A tie. Yeah, exactly.
I tried to say that as quietly as possible.
there's obviously kind of the tie-in with Justin Muir, but I got her a few years ago, while she was still there, I got her a Justin Meerum crew jersey so she could wear it there. And I mean, she would always talk about, the kids coming up, they're thrilled about it. And so he was a big deal. He's been a big deal there for such a long time. And for them to be able to get that, for him to be able to play there in Iraq, to score that goal, I think, to your point, Brian, who cares? I don't care what else happens. I don't think it was just a relief for him. I think it was just a joy to be able to do that for those fans, more so than any burden being lifted off of his shoulder. To be able to do that there on that stage in Iraq, I think it was so special.
Yeah, when Justin would leave the club over the last few years to play for Iraq, a lot of times they were playing somewhere else, and he never set foot in that country. And for him to be there, it's a turning point for Iraq, certainly, and something that they'll always remember, and certainly he will as well. It was a great moment for him. And they have the U.S. does the second of two international games tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll visit that next week. But now we need to talk about our matchup with the defending champions, Atlanta United. And if you have not been following, they have been struggling.
Yeah.
Why? And this happens in MLS. We see it over and over and over again where the defending champions come out and it's like, who are these people? They're wearing the same uniforms, but they look nothing like them. What's wrong down there?
Well, it's the worst, the first in MLS, and first the worst. It happens every year, as we've talked about. I think the biggest thing is, having Tata Martino leave is a bigger detriment to the team than I think people want to believe in Atlanta, right? And Frank de Boer coming in, he's bringing a whole different style. And
a famous name in the Netherlands.
Yeah, and soccer. A different style. Just everything about that hire was just peculiar. For sure. And I mean, their last game, not this past week or the prior weekend, they played Philly, were in a 3-4-3. It's not something I think you would have ever seen with Tata Martino. Most of the team is pretty similar in terms of the roster. So this is something, they're almost starting with a blank canvas in a way, getting away from what worked and what Tata Martino did. See, it's actually kind of interesting because, with the crew, Berhalter to Porter is in a huge jump in terms of schematics, information, things like this. Tata Martino to Frank de Boer, you're talking two whole different worlds there. And now, does that mean that their season's over because we're 3-4 weeks into it? Of course not. It's MLS. It's a long season. There's ups and downs, as we always talk about. Maybe he needs a couple months to assert himself. But I don't know if there's going to be some buyer's remorse or what with this team. And, and I also think with Almiron leaving, going to Newcastle, maybe that plays even.
Been good, man.
Absolutely, he has. I mean, maybe that plays an even bigger part because Joseph Martinez looked like he looks lost out there without him.
Yeah, and I think, like you mentioned, De Boer has a tough task. They had, they are coming off this win. They lost maybe the best player, maybe second best player. They probably still have the best player in Joseph Martinez, but. Losing the second best player as well, and you have to totally reinvent the system. those three things combined are really causing a lot of trouble. And De Boer seems to be trying this the same Dutch style that's been tried in Major League Soccer before. Ruud Gullit did it, if you want to go way back with the LA Galaxy. That was a disaster, kind
of. When you say the Dutch style, what are the hallmarks of the Dutch style?
So it's possession-based, it's attacking, and it's famous for, you know, high scoring on both ends of the pitch. So you give up a lot, you try to score a lot. They are giving up a lot. They're not necessarily scoring.
It's the arena football of...
It's just, I mean, it works really well when you have a bunch of incredibly talented attacking players like the Netherlands have. And when you don't have that level of talent, you struggle. It's the same way that if you tried to replicate the Barcelona style piece by piece in the United States, it would completely fail because everybody, you don't have a Xavi, you don't have an Iniesta, you don't have any of these guys. Well, De Boer doesn't have... You know, he doesn't have any of the talent that they have in the Netherlands. He's trying to make the same thing work with maybe three players who are at the level they need to be.
Well,
and the rest
of
the players are struggling.
Since they, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Alex, but if this is what he's seeing so far this season and it's not good, do we expect there to be any major adjustments as Atlanta comes into Columbus? Do we know? Do we have any inkling, or is that what we're going to see?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure he's a good enough manager to make those adjustments. He spent a number of years at Ajax, and then he got sacked from Ajax. And
Ajax, a big club in his homeland.
Yeah, and then he went to Inter and was sacked after less than a season, and then he went to Crystal Palace and was sacked in less than a season.
Okay.
And then he's been out of it for a while.
So he's a sad sack.
So, I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, he's a legend at Ajax, so how much slack did he get there?
Uh-huh.
I know they had a pretty decent run under him, I believe. But again, I mean, you're playing in the Netherlands, so it's the system in the country. Outside of the country, I'm not sure that it's worked as well for him. He's a legend of the game. I think they're going to give him a little bit of time, but how much time, I'm not sure. They have these really large crowds who are used to winning. They've not really experienced a downside yet.
They've suffered a week or two out of their existence.
Yeah.
Hey, look,
well,
guys.
They do have Brad Guzan.
Guys, they had to wait two whole seasons before they won an MLS Cup. Mm-hmm. All right? So
It's what's going to happen when the losses pile up and Don Garber doesn't have his attendance pouring anymore to tweet about?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I think
that's what FC Cincinnati are for. He's got yeah. He's got them ready to go.
They're $12 tickets.
They're going to yell, the Cincinnati fans on Reddit are going to yell at me again if I make ticket jokes, but they've got Cincy.
I think it's also going to be, first of all, I want to put out, I think Darlington Nagbe is maybe not a double agent because I don't think he's, you know, necessarily colluding with the crew, but he's trying
to use that word.
Yeah, exactly. We cannot prove it.
We're not exonerating Darlington Nagbe.
No, I'm not saying he colluded. Is colluding. I'm just saying it doesn't fully exonerate him either.
I need to see the full report.
But I think he's clearly seems to be a one away. I don't think the reports that we got over the winter break were unfounded. That stuff usually doesn't, especially the levels that it was being reported here in the U.S. about his discontent in Atlanta. I think that's a real thing. And then also you look at Ezequiel Bracco, who they dropped $15 million on last year. He's the guy is a tiny tank. I mean, he's a strong, good, like a midfielder who's came in off the bench last week, hasn't for whatever reason seemed to have really, you know, been able to solidify a spot there. And he's a guy who I think, you know, he might make his way back into the starting lineup this weekend. I wouldn't be too surprised. But also a player that they at least when we talk about, you know, the guys that they've gotten right, the Joseph Martinez or the Miguel Almirones, Newcastle's record signing. But they identified the young, talented players, and they spent on them, but they came to MLS, and they were MLS ready, and they're ready to produce. Bracco, you haven't seen that yet. And I wonder, you know, to the same point, obviously, Don Garber's attendance porn, that's a concern. But, you know, for this team, this Atlanta team, yes, they've got Art Blank's money, but, you know, can you really afford to miss on a $15 million transfer in MLS?
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't there something with the inter or some sort of roster spot with him though? Wasn't something like that? It wasn't necessarily because he wasn't performing. Something
I'm
with.
Not, I'm not sure.
You're talking about.
It might have. Been.
I have no idea. All I know is if they keep playing like this, they're going to have to drop those hot dog prices by another 50 cents. Otherwise, they're going to be in deep trouble.
Yeah, that's the one thing they do have going for them. They have and they do this for NFL games too. Arthur Blank is like. You just keep it. I think even at the Super Bowl, they were selling beers for a reasonable price, which I thought was amazing. I've never heard it. So, you know, kudos to him. But, you know, we need to this certainly they're catching us at the wrong time. And granted, you'll have guys coming back from the international window, maybe jet lagged and a little tired. And it'll be interesting. How do you think our lineup will do? We go with the guys that we started the season with? Are there going to be guys that are a little bit burned out? Are we going to see Zach Steffen, or is this knee injury a lingering concern? Any and all offerings along those lines are welcome here.
I would think that they're going to go back to the lineup that we were pretty familiar with, because I don't think you need to, you know, throw a big wrench into everything. You know, I think the talent's there. It's going to take a little time to get the nuances and the in terms of how Porter tweaks things compared to Berhalter, right? I think if you have Trapp back and you have Zardes back, you're already five steps ahead of where we were. And I think whether or not Steffen plays or Bendick, that could be kind of the deciding factor. Now, if Atlanta is still just discombobulated and uncertain on how the heck they're supposed to play, that's awesome. Maybe that's what we need for Joe Bendick to kind of get on a roll a little bit, because we may need him here in about 3 months for him to be
so
the guy.
So we haven't heard anything either way.
It's just a minor
Zach.
Knee injury, right? So,
yeah, I mean, they've been – I don't think they've been super forthcoming about the
like
nature of it.
It's like hockey injuries. Upper body,
yeah,
lower body. That's
yeah.
all you get.
Yep. So Federico Higuain had that knee injury for a while, I think was that 2 years ago, where he was kind of just playing through it. I think a lot of that is with Steffen too, where he's probably going to end up playing through it, and maybe when he moves to City, he'll have a couple months to kind of, you know, recover, or if they need to scope it or do some sort of minor surgery, they can do it then. I'm not really sure what's going on with that, though. I would expect them to release more information than they are, which makes me slightly nervous. But yeah, I don't know. I think we need him for this game, honestly.
Sure.
It's
a home match. Yeah. It's our first night game of the season. It's against the defending champions, and it's after a lousy performance in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think you add all those things up. And you want to be full strength on Saturday. You know what? You're going to be full strength. Was I seeing that they're having a big Save the Crew appreciation party in the tent before the game, and they're actually giving away the first 250 beers?
Giving away beer.
Ooh. Yes.
And good
now,
beer, too.
Now, after myself and if Duncan Outen is there, after the first 100 beers are gone, between the two of us, that'll leave you 150. So get in line. How does that work? I mean, I didn't even know that was legal.
That's a good point. Yeah, how is that?
Yeah, don't talk about it anymore. Shh.
All right. Well, we want you to come out to the match.
The feds are going
to We are giving away a pair of tickets, are we not? If you listen to the podcast and then go to massivereport.com, you're going to find out what sort of question you need to ask about everything we've talked about tonight. You win a pair of tickets to the match. You get there early enough. Take in one of those first 250 beers. And otherwise, they're $5 up until kickoff. It's a big party to celebrate the outstanding efforts of Save the Crew. And it couldn't be more well-timed because the defending champions are coming in. Atlanta United, and it's time to teach them another lesson. As you know, unlike Cincinnati, I would like us to beat them. How
Absolutely.
About that?
You know, and I think that's a good promotion. I think that's something you're really seeing from the new ownership group. They're really trying to reach out to the community. And, hey, what better way to reach out than free? And it's good beer. It's Land Grant.
Absolutely.
It's not like it's Keystone or something.
Yeah. It's nothing against Keystone. Don't sue us. But, you know, bitter beer face and all that.
Right.
This is the good stuff. So I hope you'll make your plans to come out to Monterey Stadium this Saturday night. 7:30 kick. Let's have our picks, and then Bart will talk about his bag, and then we got to get out of here, I guess.
Yeah, they're kicking us out. I'll go first. How about this? I think the Crew bounce back.
Okay.
And I think we're going to see a 2-1 win.
2-1 from Mike.
I think if there's any game where this crazy 3-4-3 Frank DeBoer Netherlands style thing is going to work, it's going to be against Columbus because we push guys up so much. That said, I don't think it's going to work for the Crew or for anybody, and I think we're going to get a 2-1 win.
2-1, 2-1. All right. Bart?
2-1's all around. Like, I mean, obviously I'm going to pick the Crew to win, and that 2-1, it sounded right, especially you get Giassi Zardes coming back, get whether it's, you know, Justin. I think Justin Miram factors into this game, you know, whether he's starting or whether he's coming in as a sub. I think he comes back, and I think you look at this team and you look at the environment they're going to be playing in front of. It's, you know, the Save the Crew game. It's a chance for them to hit the reset button. It's the chance for Caleb Porter to really, you know, kind of make his mark for this team coming off of a loss, and I think they'll respond well.
Well, you know, I'm going to agree with the 2-1 unless Bendik is in goal. Then I'm going to say 3-2 Crew. How about that?
So it's a win. That's fine.
A win is a win is a win. Bart, before we go, you got to talk about your bag.
Yeah, that's right. Segment 3 is brought to you by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Are you looking for expert commentary using the most advanced predictive analytical software? Tune into the Crew pregame with Dwight Burgess and Neil Seek on Fox Sports Ohio. If you're looking for something like the Mr. Show with Bob and David had a Twitch stream, then tune in each week for Rick and Rick's FIFA scouting report exclusively on GCG Bag TV. Head to YouTube.com and search GCG Bag 96 for our channel because we don't have a cool link yet. Or, as always, you can follow GCG Bag on social media. Twitter, it's GCG Bag 96. And on Facebook, it's Facebook.com/ GCG Bag 96. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing.
You had a copy change. Did you write that?
I do. I'm just only expert copywriting.
Outstanding. Well done, Bart. Hey, great work tonight, guys. I think coming out of a 3-0 loss, we made some hay tonight. We made, what is it, lemonade out of lemons or something?
Yep.
Beer out of barley or something. I don't know. Thanks to Hendox for having us tonight. Thank you, Sam. Great job as always. Got the sound, even got the sound all the way from Iraq. I don't know how you did that, but just keep doing it. All right. For Mike, for Alex, for Bart, I'm Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD1025, The Massive Report, brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. The next time we assemble here at Hendox, it'll be April, and maybe it'll be on a regular basis over 50 degrees. Spring is coming. The nice weather at Moffray Stadium will be here before you know it. And a fair warning, I'm going to be wearing shorts to games. And my legs look like a couple of popsicle sticks with hair glued to them. You have been forewarned. Travel accordingly and maybe bring goggles, protective goggles. Until then, we'll see you next week here from Hendox. This is and has been and will be the Massive Report.